if my mood is dark, I find fault in myself for not doing so, and my thoughts, repetitive and paralyzing, punish me for days. A year ago, just after Ben's disappearance, I was involved in a press conference which was televised. My role was to appeal for help in finding him. The police gave me a script to read. I assumed people watching it would automatically understand who I was, that they would see I was a mother whose child was missing and who cared about nothing apart from getting him back. Many of the people who watched, the most vocal of them, thought the opposite. They accused me of terrible things. I didn't understand why until I watched the footage of the conference, far too late to limit the damage, but then the reason was immediately obvious. It was because I looked like prey. Not appealing prey, a wide-eyed antelope, say, tottering on spindly legs, but prey that's been well hunted, run ragged, and is near to the end. I presented the world with a face contorted by emotion and bloodied from injury, a body that was shaking with grief, and a voice that sounded as if it had been roughly scraped from a desiccated mouth. If I'd imagined beforehand that an honest display of myself and my emotions, however raw, might garner me some sympathy and galvanize people into helping me look for Ben, I was wrong. They saw me as a freak show. I frightened people because I was someone to whom the worst was happening, and they turned on me like a pack of dogs. I've had requests since it was over to appear again on television. It was a sensational case, after all. I always decline. Once bitten, twice shy. It doesn't stop me imagining how the interview might go, though. I envisage a comfortable TV studio and a kindly looking interviewer, a man who says, "Tell us a little about yourself, Rachel." He leans back in his chair, which is set at a friendly angle to mine, as if we'd met for a chat in the pub. The expression on his face is the sort that someone might make if they were watching a cocktail being made for them, or an ice cream sundae, if that's your preference. We chat, and he takes time to draw me out and lets me tell my side of the story. I sound okay. I'm in control. I conform to an acceptable view of a mother. My answers are well considered. They don't challenge. At no point do I spin a web of suspicion around myself by blurting out things that sounded fine in my head. I don't flounder and then sink. This is a fantasy that I can occupy long minutes of my time. The outcome is always the same. The imaginary interview goes really well. Brilliantly, in fact. And the best thing about it is that the interviewer doesn't ask me the question that I hate most of all. It's a question that a surprising number of people ask me. This is how they might phrase it. Before you discovered that Ben had disappeared, did you have any intuition that something bad would happen to him? I hate the question because it implies some kind of dereliction of duty on my part. It implies that if I were a more instinctive mother, a better mother, then I would have had a sense that my child was in danger, or should have done. How do I respond? I just say no. It's a simple enough answer, but people often look at me quizzically, brows furrowed in that particular expression where a desire to mine someone for gossip overwhelms sympathy for their plight. Softly crinkled foreheads and inquisitive eyes ask me, "Really? Are you sure? How can that be?" I never justify my answer. No, is all they need to know. I limit my answer because my trust in others has been eroded by what happened. Of course it has. Within many of my relationships, doubt remains like slivers of broken glass, impossible to see and liable to draw blood even after you thought you'd swept them all away. There are only a very few people that I know I can trust now, and they anchor me to my existence. They know the whole of my story. A part of me thinks that I would be willing to talk to others about what happened, but only if I could be sure that they'd listen to me. They'd have to let me get to the end of my tale without interrupting or judging me, and they'd have to understand that